Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, don't get your money's worth. With this show, it has the power. And you gotta see the show. It's a dynamo. You gotta see the show. It's rock and roll. Oh, right before your eyes. He's the laughter from the sky. And he laughs until he cries. Then he dies, then he dies.
That's right. Welcome, welcome, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is your host, the Freedom Outlaw, Bill Turner, live from Woodland Park, Colorado. And I'm glad to have you here with me. The chat room is open. Please keep your obscenities and extremities to yourselves at all times. I will try and keep an eye open for any questions that may come from there. And we have a guest call-in number. It is 657-383-1757. That is 657-383-1757. And for you libertonic, supersonic, moronic callers, we've made it simple for you. We got a hotline for you. It is 657-383-1757. 657-383-1757. So I want to thank you for being with me today. Our topic, of course, is super simple. A republic, if you can keep it. Benjamin Franklin's words to someone who asked, what have you given us? What have you given us? When our founders left the hallowed halls after creating the Constitution, and they were curious as to what form of government the founders gave us. If we the people have reason to rail against uncontrolled and unaccountable central government, there's someone, or rather something else, that has as much right to be furious. I'm talking about state governments. Over the years, Washington, D.C. has overridden the authority of the states in a way that is simply un-American, or at least unconstitutional. There was a safeguard against this written into the Constitution, the 9th and 10th articles of the Bill of Rights say, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. In other words, in theory, the states and the people jointly created and control the federal government. Let me read that to you again. In other words, in theory, the states and the people jointly created and control the federal government. It has only limited authority. Our powers and rights are far broader and are, in fact, without defined limit. Let that sink in. Our powers and rights, meaning the powers of the states and the people, are far broader and are, in fact, without defined limit. They don't teach you that in school. And the federal government sure as hell doesn't want you to know that. Those pretty words have been dead letters for a long frickin' time. Why do you think the federal government calls me the Freedom Outlaw? Because I'm here to tell you, it's time we took this back. It's in the Constitution. It's settled law. It's the rule of law. The ninth article was violated before the ink was dry. The tenth has been under attack almost as long. And it's time we, the people, stood up and kicked our federal government squarely in the ass, grabbed our state government by the nose, led them around in a circle and put our boots in their ass and told them, you're going to do what we tell you or else. And the or else is, we're going to replace you with people that do. You may have heard that the Civil War, a bit of a misnomer, was fought to free the slaves. Not true. Your schools, your teachers, they lie. Slavery was ended peacefully everywhere else in the civilized world. A number of issues led to violent confrontation between the North and the South. But when it comes right down to it, purpose of the war was to prevent the southern states from successfully declaring their independence, something that at the time the Constitution was written virtually assured all states had a right to do. So when you hear Nexifornia and Texas talk about secession, they have a right to do that. Our federal government just doesn't like to hear it. And believe you me, I would love nothing more than to have the state of Mexifornia secede. They'd be broke in no time. Think about it. Why are they called states rather than provinces or colonies? It's because they were intended to be all but independent nations, bound together only for specific purposes, such as defense. When you read the opening line of the Constitution, states is not capitalized. Why? Because states gives power. When you look at it, it says United States. United is not capitalized because the states are united in one purpose. to give power to the United States. United in what purpose? To set them apart and become free from the kingdom. Most people don't even notice this when they read the original Constitution. The war between the states put the matter to rest for a long time. In the opening decades of the 20th century, a constitutional amendment, the 17th, dealt another huge blow to the state's authorities. Until 1913, the entire U.S. Senate was made up of men chosen by their state legislatures. The U.S. House represented the people. The Senate spoke for the states. It wasn't a perfect system, but it gave the states a throat to choke. If a senator wasn't representing the states, they had to answer to the state's legislature. State sovereignty raised its head again briefly during the New Deal era. But another untimely war put the issue back to sleep. By the 1960s, the very term states' rights had fallen into such disrepute that it was considered to be only a cover term for racism. And to some extent, it was. That bad PR for the states has helped enable an unprecedented expansion of federal power. So here we are today, subject to bureaucratic national health care, burdened with unfunded mandates. States' revenues are shipped to D.C., skimmed off of to fund bureaucratic red tape and bullshit, and then partially returned in highway funds and other such crapola in which the states only get if they accept 1,000 rules, regulations, and additional costs. Federal authority has warped the Constitution's interstate commerce clause to give Washington regulatory power over chickens we raise for our own food and plants we grow for our own use. And this, my friends, is regulatory bullshit at its finest. The war on terror and the war on drugs have led the feds to trumping our own state laws. Government schooling mandates flow from D.C. as the quality of our children's education slides into the dumpster. The schools have now become government indoctrination centers. The National Guard has been federalized. The Federal Reserve Bank forces paper funny money, fiat currency upon our entire nation that's backed with the full faith and credit of our United States government. I wouldn't trust these peckerheads with a nickel, much less a dollar bill. The full faith and credit, my ass. In short, Washington, D.C. has pummeled state sovereignty into near extinction, or at least slavish subservience. But belatedly, state governments are fighting back in various ways. And people in some states, people including a few government officials, are even talking secession once again. And it's about damn time. Can you imagine the state of Colorado cutting off the highways that run through it and telling the feds, you're not getting your tax money from the gas that's sold here. You're not getting the oil that's pumped out of the ground. You're not getting squat until you begin to adhere to the state's rights in this state. Go pound sand. But, of course, we would have to get rid of Governor Chicken Pooper and get a governor who has some gravitas in there in order for that to happen. We'd have to elect libertarian Senate and House in this state. We'd have to elect some people who have some balls. It seems quixotic and dangerous for small states to defy huge federal power. Remember, all this has historic precedent. And I'm not talking about the disastrous North-South War, but one of history's few successful wars, the one whose grand statement of purpose is the Declaration of Independence, the American colony's rebellion against King George III. While we tend to think of the Declaration as being a ringing statement of individual rights, which it is, it's even more a statement of the independence of America's colonial governments, soon to be sovereign states. When he wrote the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson said, "The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries, usurpations, all having a direct object, the establishment of absolute tyranny over these states." He then proceeded to list a number of these abuses he thought most noteworthy. Here are some of the statements Jefferson chose to open his list. He, King George, has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation, till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. Sound familiar? How about Obamacare, for an example? How about the failure to repeal it? He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. How about the enforcement of the Second Amendment? Why should we have to pay fees to carry guns? Why should we have to pay fees to have licenses to drive an automobile, to fish, to hunt, to pan for gold? These are natural rights that belong to all of us equally. Now, these are not exactly points of contentment, because most states in federal government today just run over the people, and the people are too spineless to stand up to them. But Jefferson's declaration, filled with complaints like these, that boil down to the king is trying to run everything from this far-off throne in Washington, D.C., when he ought to be leaving it alone for us to govern ourselves. Sound familiar? Until recently, state governments have made little resistance to being colonized by Washington. There's one huge reason for this: the money D.C. taketh away, and the money D.C. giveth back after they skim off the top, much like the mob does in Vegas. Even today, much resistance would completely dissolve if the feds ponied up big enough bribes. State resistance to federally mandated requirements of the Real ID Act in 2005, for instance, has been entirely based on complaints, unfunded mandates. If the federal government gave enough taxpayer money to its colonies, they would shut up and yield. The colonials of 1776 were wiser. The Declaration also contained a number of complaints like this one. He has made judges dependent upon his will alone for the tenure of their offices and amount of payment of their salaries. Now, why on earth would Jefferson, speaking for the colonies and delegates, complain about King George footing their bills? You can bet that if Bush, Obama, or Trump offered to fund the state's court systems, governors and legislators across the land would shout, "Yay! Free money!" And our colonial ancestors understood precisely what King George was doing. He was buying loyalty of an entire branch of the government. And that's what we've allowed to happen in the United States on a larger scale. Jefferson was no anarchist. He thought government was a good thing, but a far-off central government that sucked up all the power to itself and paid scant attention to the authority of the people and the states was of no value. It was a detriment. Well, I hear someone say, "So what?" complaining if nothing can be done about it. As you said, the Civil War pretty much ended the whole question. Not so fast. Though you'll rarely hear about it from mainstream news sources, resistance is growing and growing increasingly serious. It's no longer just six libertarians yakking about the 10th Amendment at the corner Denny's, which, by the way, didn't pay its taxes and got shut down. As of this writing, over 40 state legislators have introduced and several have passed some form of state sovereignty legislation, reminding the Washington government that the 10th Amendment to the Constitution exists. There's even a 10th Amendment Senate, or a 10th Amendment legislation, and a 10th Amendment organization. Look it up. The 10th Amendment to the Constitution exists and is still the highest law in the land, resolving to take back control of our own National Guards. Others defy federal power on medical marijuana. Several states have passed and are even considering Firearms Freedom Act, born in the sovereign state of Montana in the mind of heroic activist Gary Marbut, which decrees that guns produced and used locally are not subject to federal control. Yes, such local actions may be toothless, but they're a necessary prelude to a second, more radical step, state nullification. Nullification means that a state demands that the federal government show by what constitutional authority it imposes laws on the states and their residents. If D.C. can't do that, then states can declare any federal laws unconstitutional and therefore null and void. You may have heard news, gas bags score nullification is some wacky teabagger tactic. But Thomas Jefferson and James Madison don't qualify as whack jobs. They're the first ones who did it with their Virginia and Kentucky resolutions back in 1798 and 1799. Those resolutions were passed as a reaction to the Alien and Sedition Act, the U.S. Patriot Act of today. Later, South Carolina nearly got in a shooting war with Washington over nullification on a tariff in 1832. And that time it wasn't the state that blinked, it was D.C. Granted, nullification hasn't been tried much recently, but it's a valid constitutional policy. With Washington getting more over the top every week, nullification talks been coming back in a big way. Look it up. Juries have been nullifying charges against citizens on a regular basis. If you get charged with a crime, you can get jury nullification written into the rules before the trial begins. Therefore, the jury has to be notified of nullification at the time the rules are given to the jury. Get it into the rules up front, you're screwed. But if you get them in up front at the pretrial motions, you can get it in so it has to be read to the jury. And at that time, a jury of your peers can and will nullify a petty crime and you can walk. But if you don't get it in up front, you will be found guilty. Learn about jury nullification. Make sure that you and your public defender get it into the rules up front. Most public defenders are fools. Make sure you have this information. Teller County will hang your ass out to dry, and so will the rest of the country. The ultimate form of resistance, of course, is secession. For good or ill, this is another word that became radioactive after the late unpleasantness between the states. But words gotten a lot more play in the past few years than in the previous century. Become educated. You can even secede as a county. Don't let your state fool you. This freedom outlaw knows a lot more than he has time to cover in his 30-minute radio show. And if you want a sponsor, you want to help advertise, we can take this 30-minute show and make it a 60-minute show, and we can blow this mother up. Can constitutional conflict between states and overbearing central power be resolved peacefully? It wasn't in the 1770s. It wasn't in the 1860s. For a peaceful revolution, either the states have to back down and the Mordor on the Potomac does. I doubt if the Mordor on the Potomac will. In the past, smart theory would have been for Washington to, but they won't. So arm up, ammo up, and get ready. Listen to this show and get smart. But for all the tremendous power the central government has, it's going to take a lot more. We, the people, have to get wise, and then we have to kick some ass at the legislature and kick some ass in the streets.
I don't know if you can, but can you get an order for ONS, that's ONS Junior Market. The address is 1934 East Anaheim. All the windows are busted out. And
it's like a free-for-all here, and the owner should be able to come down here and see if he can secure his business if he wants to. April 26, 1992, there was a riot on the street. Tell me, where were you? You were sitting home watching your TV while I was participating in some anarchy. First spot we hit, it was my liquor store. I finally got all that alcohol I can't afford. With red lights flashing, time to retire. And then we turned that liquor store into a structure fire. Next stop we hit, it was the music shop. It only took one look to make that window drop. Finally we got our own PA. Where do you think I got this guitar that you're hearing today? Hey!
Call fire at Delbert.
Oh,